Okay, we're going to begin here at the top of Kuf Bet Amud Aleph. We're going to continue explanation of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "As zevo shel bala bayit, the dung belongs to the bala bayit, ve'en la'socher la'yotzei min ha'tanur u'min ha'karayim bilvad," that the tenant only has rights to that which is produced, or the output of the ovens and the stoves, the ash, obviously, that could be used as a fertilizer, that belongs to the tenant. So it says, "B'may eskinan," what's the case over here? Ilema, if we say the case is b'chatzer de agirle l'socher, that the landlord rented out not only the house but also the yard to the tenant, v'torei de socher, and it's the animals of the tenant, amay shel bala bayit, then why should it belong to the bala bayit at all? Meaning that both the property and the animals belong to the socher here, so what right does the bala bayit have to this dung? Ella, so what's the other option? B'chatzer de lo agirle l'socher, we're talking about a courtyard that's not rented out to the tenant, b'torei de maskir, and it's also the animals of the maskir, of the landlord. Mar says, pshita, what do we need to know that for? So obviously, if it's the maskir, it's the landlord's property and the landlord's animals, of course the zevel, of course the dung belongs to him. Who else should it belong to? So Gemara says, lo, tzricha b'chatzer de maskir. We're talking about a case where it's the chatzer of the maskir, v'tore de atu mi'almo, and they are the oxen that came from Hefker, that they came in and they visited his property. Now we're reading now according to the Girsa of Rashi. Rashi says that here we're talking about the chatzir maskir, shelo hiskir at the chatzir. When it means the chatzir of the maskir, means that he did not rent it out to the socher, meaning that it belongs to the landlord, and now we have animals that come from Hefker, and they're depositing their dung on this property. So that's the way Rashi reads it. On the other hand, the Rambam reads it over here, that even when we're talking about Lutzricha, that he doesn't have the girsa, probably doesn't have the girsa, but chatzir of the maskir, but rather he says, right, that it's the chatzir of the maskir, but it could even be rented out to the socher. Even if it's rented out to the socher, when the animals come and deposit their dung there, then they belongs to the maskir. So according to Rashi, it's very easy to understand, or it makes sense, that it's the landlord's property, and you have these animals that come from Hefker, and they deposit their dung on the property, and that's why it's going to belong to the maskir, and we'll see in a second what the chiddush is in that, or why is that important. Whereas according to the Rambam, it's even a bigger chiddush, that even if the socher, even if the tenant has rented the property, if animals come from Hefker and deposit their dung on this property, it will still belong to the maskir, it will still belong to the landlord. The Gra quotes this Girsa in the Rambam over here, but it's clear that the Rambam is very difficult, because we know in many places that once the socher has the rental of the property becomes his for any acquisition. So the Ktzos and others on the din of the Rambam have to explain, or try to explain, this difficult position of the Rambam, and they show that there are many places where the Rambam's position doesn't make so much sense over here. So Gemara says, okay, so Messiah the Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, this Chiddush of the Mishnah, that if the property belongs to the maskir, he didn't rent it out according to Rashi, or according to the Rambam, he did rent it out, and then these animals from Hefker come and deposit their dung there, that it belongs to the landlord. What does that teach us? That teaches like Rabbi Yossi Berchanina, Dam Rabbi Yossi Berchanina, Chatzero Shel Adam Konelo Shelo Midato, that a person's property can act as either an extension of him or his agent, and it can acquire this Hefker without his knowledge. So Gemara says, Meitevei, is this position of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina so clear? This person makes a declaration that any hefker that comes into my property on this day will belong to me. Tikneli chatzerai, my chatzer will acquire it on my behalf. Lo amar klum, doesn't work. If we really hold of this position, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, which is that your chatzer can act even without your knowledge, then certainly here, where you're with your knowledge, you're saying that the chatzer should acquire for you, it should work. Right? So if that's the case, that why doesn't it work over here? No, our case over here, or the case of this braisa, is b'chatzer she'ena mishtameret. A qualification for the din of Rabbi Yossi b'Chanina is that not every chatzer will acquire on your behalf. It's only a chatzer that's mishtameret, right? A chatzer in which the item that is contained within it is considered to be protected and indicative or indicative of the fact that you have exerted ownership over it. But a chatzer she'ena mishtamaret, if it's a chatzer that doesn't have those features to it, then even if you say my chatzer will work on my behalf, it can't work on your behalf because it just doesn't have that characteristic of being a chatzer mishtamaret. It says if that's the case, that the brisa there is talking about a case where it's a chatzer she'ena mishtamaret, ema seifa. What are you going to do with the rest of the brisa? It says yetzo lo shem mitzi'ah be'ir. If the item has now acquired a name of being a mitziah, being something that has been lost and now possibly taken possession by someone else, the varav kayamim, then it works. So iba chatzer shena mishtamaret. If it's a chatzer shena mishtamaret, how could he make any acquisition of it? Ki yatzalo shem mitziah beir, am I happy? Just because it gets now a shem mitziah in the city, what does that do? Meaning the fact that this item is known to be a hefker item and is now found in his property, why should that matter if it's a chatzer shena mishtamaret? The chatzer mishtamaret just can't function in that way of being a vehicle for acquisition on his behalf. So Gemara says no. Since it's become well known that this is a mitziah, that this item is a hefker, people will distance themselves with it. Then they will consider it or classify it as if it is a chatzer ha mishtamaret. So what does that mean? It means that we consider the shame mitziah be'ir. Rashi says, or Rashi defines it, it means that she'atza kol be'ir, that there's a rumor circulating in the city or some sort of the information is passing in the city. Shabbat svi shavur, toksadeo. There is a lame or injured deer that is now in his property. O minanar tifle tocho dagim, or the water, the river overflowed and dumped a bunch of fish into his property. And since they've become known, or it's known that they are a mitziah and his property, they're sinning in his property, people in general will walk away from that. They will not go and touch it. So since they won't get touch it, it's effective. The chatzer, even though it's not mishtamer, nevertheless, people's attitude or people's understanding of what these objects are make it as if it was a chatzer mishtamer because people won't go and take the item anymore. Since they won't touch the item, won't take the item, that makes it as if it was a chatzer ha mishtameret. So meitavei, Gemara asks another question on this position of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. Zevel yotze min ha-tanur tanur min ha-kiraim. The dung that comes out of, or the refuse that comes out of the oven and the stove, ha-kolet min ha-avir, or someone who catches the dung in the air, harihu shalo, it belongs to him, meaning him here would be the socher. Vishib barefet, vishib ha-chatzer, that was just found in the cowshed, and in the chatzer in the courtyard, that belongs to the balabayit, that belongs to the landlord. If we have the din of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, damar chatzero shaladam konolo shalomidato, that the chatzer of a person can work on his behalf, then kolet ma'avir amai, right? Why should it be that the tenant, when he catches the dung in the air, which we'll explain in a second, arayu shalom, it belongs to him, avir chatzerohu. It's the airspace of the courtyard of the landlord. If it's the airspace of the courtyard of the landlord, then it should be acquired. We know that the airspace of an individual is able to acquire just like the property itself. So over here we have this tenant who's coming. There are cows that have shown up in this courtyard, and they are defecating, right, disposing of their dung in the courtyard. So instead of letting it go to the ground, he goes and he catches the dung in a bucket or some sort of shovel in order to use for himself. And the brisa says that that's fine, that the tenant then can keep that type of dung. Now, if we have the principle of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, which says that your chatzer, your courtyard, can work to create a kinyan on your behalf, then just like the kark or the ground of the chatzer can do it, so too the airspace can acquire on your behalf. So why is the tenant allowed to go in there and stick his kli and take the dung? As Gemara says, we have two answers. Amar Abaye, b'mad b'kli b'shulei para. That Abaye explains it's the case where he places the kli, whatever receptacle that he's catching the dung in, he puts it up against the cow directly, and therefore the cow is disposing of its dung, it's going to the defecating right into the kli itself, so it never really is exposed to the avir of the chatzer. If it's never exposed to the avir of the chatzer, there was no moment where the landlord's chatzer could make an acquisition on his behalf, because it's going directly into the property of the tenant of the socher. Rava Amar, Rava offers a different possibility, avir shin sofol anuach lav kemunach dami. When do we say that the airspace of a chatzer is able to acquire on behalf of the individual, just like the chatzer, just like the courtyard itself? That is when the object eventually will reach the courtyard or eventually reach the chatzer. Therefore, the airspace can work on behalf of the owner when the object eventually will end up in the chatzer or on the chatzer. In this instance, what's ending up happening is that the tenant is interceding or interjecting his kli in order to stop the dung from reaching the ground, and by doing that, he is making it so that the avir of the chatzer, even though it's exposed to the avir of the chatzer, nevertheless, this avir will not work to acquire the object because the dung will never reach the ground of the chatzer, or never actually reach the ground of the chatzer. Rashi says, "Umi pshitele the Rava." Is it so simple to Rava that this is the case, that when something is in the air or in the airspace, that if it will does not reach the ground or touch the ground, then that's not considered to be a acquisition by the chatzer. Well, Bahami Bai Baila. Didn't Rava ask this question exactly? Dibai Rava, Zarak Arnaki Betetach Zeh V'yatzta Mipetach Zeh. Person who is mafkir, makes his wallet ownerless, and then he throws the wallet. And the wallet, in this throw, enters the person's house on one end and goes out the other end without ever stopping inside this individual's house, and it lands somewhere else after it leaves the house. Mahu, what's the din when the wallet passed through this individual's house? Avir shen sofol anuach kumunach dami. Over here, the wallet eventually never will reach or never settle in this house. So do we still consider that to be a stopping or a placement of the wallet, meaning that we look at the movement of the wallet through the house as being discrete movements, and therefore at each moment it's actually been placed in the house and then it's leaving afterwards. So despite the fact that it will never land in the house, but it's passing through the house is enough to be classified as if it stopped in the house. Olav kumunach dami. Or do we say no? The fact that it was airborne the entire time when it moved through the house, that makes it as if it never settled there, and therefore the bayit or the chatzer can never make a kinyan on it. So there we see what that Rava has exactly this safek. When the item will never land in the bayit or the chatzer, then we have a question, according to Rava, whether the airspace is able to acquire. So why does Rava over here take it for granted that if the if the tenant comes along and sticks a bucket in and catches the dung, that for sure that belongs to the tenant, and the landlord has no rights to that, even though it passed through the airspace of the landlord, because it'll never reach the ground of the landlord. So how could he, in one case, be certain, and the other case, have a doubt? I said, well, the cases are really different. Hatam lo mifsak velo mide. In the case of the wallet that is airborne through the house, there is nothing that is dividing between the wallet and the ground, meaning that the wallet technically could reach the ground. It's just the speed or the trajectory of the wallet makes it so that it doesn't touch the ground. But there would be a possibility, if it was stopped there, it would land into the chatzer on the bayit that it's passing through. On the other hand here, by the case of the dung, there is no possibility that it will reach the ground, because the fact that the socher, the tenant, puts his kli, his utensil there to catch the dung, makes it by definition that can never reach the ground of the chatzer. So that's what Rava says. When it comes to an instance where hacha mifsa kli, in our case over here, where there's any utensil that stands between the dung and the ground and it will never reach the ground, in that instance we say for certain it does not belong to the person who owns the land or the chatzer or the bayit, because it will never reach the ground. On the other hand, if the inability of the object to reach the ground has to do with its speed, its trajectory, not because there's anything physically dividing between it and the ground, then that's when Rava has his safek about whether it's considered kumunachtam, as if it's settled into that location or not when it passes through in an airborne manner. Now the Gemara asks about the second half of the Braisa. Shiba vishaparefet vishibachatzer harielu shel balabayit. Well, if it's in the refet or in the chatzer, these belong to the balabayit. Gemara says, tarte? Why do you need two? So according to Rashi, the Gemara's question over here is the redundancy, in that why do I need it that to mention refet and chatzer, because both of them belong to the balabayit. If they both belong to the balabayit, and we're saying that the dung belongs to the balabayit, why do you have to teach me that twice? Right? It's enough to teach me that din once, because since he didn't rent it out to the tenant, and what's the difference of whether it's the cowshed or the chatzer? If he didn't rent it out to him, then it's clear it belongs to the balabayit. So to repeat that din twice seems unnecessary. So that's the question according to Rashi. Tosfos, on the other hand, says the question is actually that there's a stira between the two. Because when you say refet, when you say that what is found in the cowshed belongs to the balabayit, the indication or the implications from that are because it's found in the refet in the cowshed, that's why it belongs to the balabayit. Because the cowshed is an area that was never rented out to the tenant. And number two, it's an area where the tenant has really no rights to enter. And therefore it belongs to the balabayit. The implications, or what we could say from this, or infer from this, is that in the chatzer, in the regular courtyard, where the socher, the tenant, has a right to pass, to go in and out of his house through that courtyard, even though he didn't rent the courtyard, he still has an easement to pass through because of his rental, then in that case, he wouldn't necessarily belong to the balabayit, it might belong to the socher, belong to the renter. So the inference from the refit piece of the braisa sounds like that the chatzer would not belong to the balabayit. On the other hand, the next word in the braisa is that the chatzer belongs to the balabayit. So the problem, according to Tosfos over here, is exactly that, the chatzer. What's the din of the chatzer? According to the first, if you write the word refit, it sounds like the din of the chatzer is that it doesn't belong to the balabayit. When you write the word chatzer, it sounds like chatzer does belong to the balabayit. So that's the problem with having it both be the chatzer and the refit being mentioned in the braisa. So Gemara answers up, Amar Abaye, hachikamar, vishabarefit, shibachatzer, Hari Elu Shel Balabait. So here we're talking about a case where it's a chatzer that is rented out to the tenant. Then all the dung that is found in the cow shed belongs to the balabait. And the Bryce is teaching us that when a person rents out a courtyard, he does not include the cow shed in renting out the courtyard. And that's the chiddush of the Bryce. The Bryce says that it's the refet shib chatzer. It's the cow shed in the chatzer. So even though the chatzer has been rented out to the tenant, to the socher, to the renter over here, nevertheless, the cow shed remains in the possession of the Bal HaBayit, or the landlord, and therefore anything, all the dung that is found in the cowshed will belong to the Bal HaBayit. So, Amar Rav Ashi, Zotomeret, HaMaskir Chatzero Stam, Lo Iskir Refet Sheba. The conclusion, obviously, from this braisa, the way Rabbi is explaining this braisa, is that a person who rents out a courtyard, the cowshed is not included in such a rental, that we don't assume that it is included in such a transaction. So, Meitavei, another question on this position of Biosi Barabi Chanina about the fact that a chatzer can acquire on behalf of the individual. Yone Shovach v'yone Aliyah. So we're talking about here doves that are living in a dovecot or up in the attic. But in these cases, it's where they eat from Hefker. It's not that the owners feed them. They're not domesticated doves. They come, they fly in, but they happen to nest in these areas. Then, Chayavot b'shiluach. You're required then to perform Shiluach HaKein. If you want to take the eggs from these doves, you still have to shoo away the mother bird. V'asurot b'gezel. And another individual may not take them from the property of the individual in which either the dovecotes or the attic that they are nesting in belongs, mipnei darchei shalom. Even though technically it's not, there's no ownership by the individual who owns the property over these doves, nevertheless, mipnei darchei shalom, we assign it as if he has ownership here. The Gemara says, vim ita laha da amar Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina, if we hold of this concept, of this din of Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina, then chatzer shel adam kono lo shelo midato. Then over here, the chatzer will take possession of the items, even without the dat of the balabayit. Then how can you karikan ki karei prat lemizuman? The din of Shiluach HaKein only applies ki kare, when it happens to be happenstance. I mean, it's not when it's domesticated, it's not when it's owned by the individual. If it's owned by the individual, if something that's already mizuman is prepared and that lives there, and it's owned by you, then there's no din of Shiluach HaKein. The fact that the Braisa demands Shiluach HaKein over here, despite the fact that these animals are in your chatzer, and is implications from that, or the inference we can draw from that, is that the birds or the eggs don't belong to you. Because had they belonged to you, then there would be no requirement of Shiluach HaKein. And the fact that the Braisa demands Shiluach HaKein is indicative that you don't own it. And according to Rabbi Yossi Rechanina, you should own it because it's in your chatzer. So the Gemara is going to give a number of answers here. The first one, Amar Rava, is Beitza Bitziat Rubahu Di Chayvela B'Shiluach. That the egg becomes a chayav in Shiluach HaKein once the majority of the egg has left the mother, has left the bird. Umikne lokanya de nafalechatzeron. But the individual doesn't take possession of the egg until it falls into his chatzer. So ein hachanami, if the egg had reached his chatzer, then he would own it, and there would be no din of shliach hakein. The Braisa is talking about a case where the individual wants to take the egg before it reaches his chatzer. He wants to grab the egg before he reaches the chatzer. So once the majority of the egg is out of the animal, he must shoot the mother bird in order to take that egg, because it hasn't come into his possession yet by touching the chatzer. And the Gemara says, v'chigdani, and the Bryce's demand for Shiluch HaKein here is before the egg reaches the actual Chatzer. Umar says, then what are you going to do with the rest of the Bryce? Why is there a problem of Gezel? Meaning, Gezel would only apply if he takes ownership, meaning it reaches his property, then he would be the owner, and then there'd be a problem of Gezel. Over here, we're saying there's a problem with Gezel, but the truth is he has no reason to say that he took possession of it because it never reached his Chatzer. Umar says, Aiman. The Gezel is talking about the mother. So this happens to be a machlokes, Tosos, and Rashi. The easier way to read it is like Tosos, who says, Ayiman means on the mother and not the Beitzim. That the Gezel will never apply to the Beitzim over here. Since the Beitzim never came into his possession, there's no inyan of Gezel, whereas the mothers and the birds have been nesting here. And even truthfully, even though they're not really his and not his possession, but Mishum Darche Shalom, we consider as if his Chatzer has taken some sort of ownership over it, and therefore there's a din of Gezel, Mipteh Darche Shalom. That's the way and Tosos learns. Rashi, on the other hand, learns that afilu iman nami kamar. That means that isur applies to iman and to the beitzim. I mean, just like it's restricted on taking the mothers, so too you're restricted on taking the eggs. And that's what mitarche shalom means over here. V'bayitema, this is a subset. This is like the first answer we saw from Rava. And this v'bayitema is a subset in the second question over here, which is the olam beitzim. They were talking about the beitzim. According to Rashi over here, it means on the beitzim and not the mother, right? Umidanafik ruba date eloi. Once the robe comes out, the person already thinks it's his and he has his mind on it. He really is if he's making an acquisition on it. And even true, mitzad kinyanim, it doesn't have a din of gezel, but mipnei darche shalom, since he's already focused on it, we classify it as being in his possession. So the first answer to our question about why your chatzer is not koneh for you in this instance. So the first answer is by Rava that it has to do with the fact that the beitzim never reached your chatzer. Since they never reached your chatzer, there's no din of a kinyan, and yet you're still chayav in shiluch hakein because the robe of the beitzah came out. And the issue of gezel will answer in one of two ways. Right, that was what the Bayitema is why is there a dark problem of Gezel? Either because of Iman, according to Tosa means only Iman, according to Rashi means Iman plus the Beitzim, or because of the Beitzim, which we just gave in the Bayitema, because Date Eloi. Now, Vahashta, the second answer to this issue of Rabbi Yosef Mekaniah, Damar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Asur, this quote by Beitzim, Kol Zman She'im Rovetzet Alehem, that Rabbi Yehuda Marav says that as long as you have a din of Shiluach HaKein, then you may not take possession of the Beitzim, meaning that your kinyan will not work on the Beitzim until you have fulfilled the mitzvah min HaTorah to send away the aim. So if that's the case, then also over here, then Asur, this quote by Beitzim, right, Kol Zman She'im, Shnemar Shaleach, Teshaleach Et HaEim, that first you must shoo away the mother bird, and then only afterwards are you permitted to take the eggs. So we don't have to use the answer of Rava, which means that it never reached the chatzer, and that's why there's no kinyan here. But here, even if it reaches the chatzer, there's no kinyan. Why? His chatzer is either only an extension of him or an agent of him, can only be as good as he is. Meaning that the landlord can acquire eggs, then his chatzer can also acquire on his behalf. But if he can't acquire the eggs himself, then why should his chatzer be able to do it? And over here, since he cannot acquire the eggs because he's yet to shoo away the mother bird, then so too his chatzer may not acquire it on his behalf. So therefore here, as long as he's not able to acquire the eggs, because it hasn't been shooed away, the mother bird, so too his chatzer can't act on his behalf. So here, even though the eggs have entered into his chatzer, and according to Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina, that should be sufficient to acquire it on his behalf, that's only true if he could acquire it himself. But in this instance, since he couldn't acquire it himself, because it's before the mother bird was shooed away, so his chatzer can't do it as well. Mar says, Yachi asurat begezel mipnei darche shalom. Now you're seeing the Isur Gezel is because of darche shalom. Now, what's the case? Either shalcha, if you already sent away the mother bird, gezel malyahu, then it's real gezel, because once the mother bird is shooed away, he can take the eggs. That means his chaser should be able to acquire it on his behalf. Either lo shalcha, if he never shooed away the mother bird, haibayi shlucha, right? Then he needs to send it, meaning that he can't make any acquisition. What do you mean, darche shalom? There's nothing here. His chaser has not acquired at all on his behalf because he never sent away the bird. And if he didn't say when the bird, he can't take possession. His chaser can. Nobody can take possession of it. So Gemara says, we're talking about here, but katan delav bar shiluachu. We're talking about a katan who comes to take the eggs, meaning that the bird is sitting or incubating eggs on someone's property, and the katan comes and grabs those eggs out from under the bird. That's the way Tosfos explains that. Obviously, the katan didn't shoo away the bird, because as soon as he shoos away the bird, the chatzer of the balabai would take possession of it. So it must be that the katan reached under the bird that is incubating the eggs and takes the eggs out. The Gemara says, well, if he's a katan, the labar shiluachu. So fine, so he's not chayev in shiluach hakein. So when he takes the eggs, it's fine. He goes into his possession. But then, what are you going to do? Katan bar darche shalom hu? Why does the katan then have to return the eggs? Because we say it's gezel because of darche shalom from the balabait. Meaning, what is a katan? We can't hold a katan to a standard of darche shalom. That he's not a bardat in the sense that we can hold him to that standard of darche shalom. Where it says, hachikamar, avishal katan chayev lagzir lo mipnei darche shalom. No, the father of this katan should return it to the owner where it was taken from because of darche shalom. So the obligation doesn't devolve upon the katan himself, but rather on the father to ensure that the eggs are returned to the owner, the landlord. I mean, technically he's not an owner mitzad kinyan, but he's midarche shalom. He is the owner over those eggs. All right, so that we just went through the Gemara. The Gemara wanted to, just in summary, learn our Mishnah. What was the chiddush of the Mishnah that the landlord is entitled to the zevel over here? And we said that the chiddush is that a case where they were hefker animals that came into his chatzer and deposited their dung over there. Gemara says that's like the din of Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina, which is that a chatzer of a person can acquire on his behalf. The Gemara then brought a number of braitot that seemed to contradict this position of Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Chanina. The first case was the case of Mitziah. The Gemara answered there that it was a chatzer sheino mishtamer. The din of Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina only applies when the chatzer is a guarded or closed chatzer, which protects the property inside of it. But if it's an open chatzer, that does not acquire on behalf of the individual. Then we brought the question from the Braisa about the tanur and the kiraim and kolid ba'avir, that one person who catches it out in the air. And there the Gemara says, well, the catching in the air is different, either according to Abaye, because it never goes into the airspace of the individual, or according to Rabbi, if it enters the airspace, if it's never going to reach the floor of the chatzer or the chatzer itself, then that's not considered to be a kinyan, even according to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina. And the last question we asked was from the Yonim, from the dovecotes, right? According to that, why is there a demand for shiluach hakein here if the eggs are being deposited on the property of this individual? And the Gemara's answer, according to Rabbi, is true. It's just they're not reaching the property. They're actually, the person's trying to take the egg before it reaches the property, and that's why there's a demand for shiluach hakein. The second answer is according to Rabbi Yudah Marav, who says that until there is shiluach hakein, no one is able to take possession of the eggs. If you're not able to take possession of the eggs, then your chatzir cannot either take possession of the eggs on your behalf, since you yourself can't do it until you have sent away the mother bird. Okay, new Mishnah. A maskir by the chaveril shana, person who rents out a property to an individual for a year, and then nit abra shana. And then, obviously, they didn't know, like today, where our calendars are set, we know what's going to be a leap year. But there was a chance that Beis Din could introduce a leap year without knowing, or without the knowledge of the people at the beginning of the year. They may not have known that it was going to be a leap year. But here, since he rented it for a year, once the month is put in, that's still classified as part of the year. So there, nit abra the socher. The renter, or the tenant, benefits. He pays the same amount, he gets 13 months. Hiskir lo the chodeshim. On the other hand, if he rents it out on a month-to-month basis, then if nit abra hashana, if there is now a leap year, nit abra the maskir. The maskir collects, because if he's paying monthly, there is another month, and he'll collect for that month. Masi b'tzipori, there was a case in Tzipori, b'chad she'sachar mechatz mechavero, a person rented a bathhouse from his friend, b'shnei masar zahav, 12 gold coins, l'shana, for the whole year. Midinar zahav l'chodesh, 1 gold coin per month. Uba maset. And this case came before Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, with Rabbi Yossi. Obviously, the case is where there was a leap year, that there was an added month put into the calendar. And then this Maisa came for him, Rabbi Yossi, Vamru Yachloku et HaChodesh HaYibur, that additional month that they will have to split the difference between them. The Gemara is going to explain why this is the case, but right now the Avami of the Gemara is because we are not sure whether Tfos Loshon Rishon or Tfos Loshon Acharon. We don't know. The person made a statement both that he's renting it out for the year, as well as the fact that he's renting out month to month. So since we don't know which of these two statements dictates over here, we say Yechloku, either because we're not sure of Tfos Loshon Rishon or Tfos Loshon Acharon, or you could just say because each one has a valid claim over here. Each one can say that the statement or part of the statement supports my position. And since neither one has a better argument than the other, we say Yechloku. So Gemara asks the first question, Maaseh Listor? How come the Maaseh is not referencing either of the two first cases? The first case was to the benefit of the socher, the second case was the benefit of the maskir. And all of a sudden you bring a case where it has both issues involved. So when it says Hasurei Mechsera, the Mishnah is, we need to mend the Mishnah, it's missing some words. That is that there's a third case. The first case is where he does a yearly lease. In that case, the socher, the renter benefits, the tenant benefits, if there's a leap year. If he does it a month to month, then the maskir, the landlord benefits, if there is a leap year. And then the Mishnah discusses a case where they had used both lishonot. In the case where they had both lishonot, then yachloku, umase, and then the masa comes to support that position. Bitsipori, bechach shesachar mechatz mechavro, b'shneim ase zuvim lishonam, yidin azav lechodesh, upam ase lefnei rabbi Shimon Gamliel, lefnei rabbi Yossi, amru yachloku et chodesh ha'ibur. So now, we're going to have a machlokas here between Rav and Shmuel, how to explain this part of the Mishnah. Umar Rav, if I have a tam, had I been there, have a yahivna le kule the maskir, I would have given the entire amount to the maskir, to the landlord. I believe it should all belong to the landlord. My kamash malon. What's Rav teaching us here? Tfos loshon achron. Rav says it's clear to me that whatever the second statement is, that is what we go by. So in our case over here, he said, b'shneimah ser zav l'shana, midina zav l'chodesh. So the second statement tells you that it's a monthly lease. If it's a monthly lease, then the benefit goes to the maskir. So Rav basically says that tfos l'shon achron, we go after the latter statement. We don't say it's explanation of the first statement, rather a reversal from the first statement. And the second statement will dictate. And since the second statement dictates over here, it's a month-to-month lease. If that's the case, the benefit accrues to the landlord. So Mar says, Har Amar Rav Chadazimno. If that's a conclusion for Rav, that he's trying to teach us Tfos Loshon Acharon, that we go after the latter statement, then Rav already told us one other time. Damar Rav Huna, Amar Bei Rav. So Rav Huna says, they said in the base medrash of Rav. So now we'll first explain this according to Rashi. Rashi says, Istira Me'amo'i, that if he says, makes two statements, he's trying to sell an object, they're discussing the price of an object, and then he says, istira me'amoy, the price for the object is an istira, istira is a sella, me'amoy, that has 100 prutot, then me'amoni, he has to pay 100 prutot. Me'amoy, if he says 100 prutot, istira, the sella, then istira, he pays a sella. So let's, according to Rashi, Rashi is explaining over here, what is the issue of a istira and me'amoy? Istira is a sella. A sella is worth 96 prutot. It is not worth 100 prutot, but rather only 96 prutot. And that's because the sella that we're talking about here is a sella medina. A sella medina, we know, is 1/8 of a sella tzuri. And a sella tzuri is worth 4 dinar. That means that a sella medina is worth half a dinar. And we know that there's a relationship that a dinar equals, a half dinar equals 3 ma'al kesef. And each ma'ah kesef equals 2 pundion, and each pundion equals 2 isarim, and each isar equals 8 prutot. That means that if we are to multiply that out, that means that there are 32 ma'ot to each, 32 prutot to each ma'ah. There are 32 prutot to each ma'ah, and half a dinar is worth 3 ma'ah. 3 times 32 is 96. So that means that if he were selling a dinar, if he was paid, the relationship should really be 96 to 1 sella. Yet in the statement of the individual here, he mentions 100. So the way we are understanding it now is that he made two contradictory statements. He said in the first case, istira, and then me'amoy. He said a sella, which is 96, then he said 100. So the Gemara's conclusion is me'amoy. With tfos l'shon achron, we go after the latter statement, and therefore it's 100. But on the other hand, if he said me'amoy, he said 100, and then istira, which is a sella, is 96, then istira, we go after the 96, because that was his latter statement. The Gemara says, imi hatam, had I just had the statement of Rav by the coins, Hava Amina, I would have thought Perushe Kamefarish, right, that he is just coming to explain it. So the way Rashi again explains the Gemara over here is that simply these two statements are explaining each other, meaning that Istira, the first statement, Istira Asela Me'amoi. When he says Istira is Me'amoi, he's not saying Tfos Lashon Achmoi, he's not saying say Me'amoi and that's it. He's saying, I want an Istira, I want a big coin that is worth 100 prutot. You're going to have to give me a seller that's not worth 96, but a big one that's worth 100. Or the other statement, instead of saying Tfos Lashon Achron, which means that when he says Me'amoi Istira, it means Istira, because that's the second statement, but rather it means Me'amoi, I want you to give me 100 prutot Istira that are equal to an Istira. Istira is only worth 96, so give me 100 prutot that aren't such good prutot, that are really equivalent to 96 prutot. So that's the way Rashi learns. Rashi simply learns that when the Gemara says, right, that it was Perushe Kamefaresh, means in that case of the coins, that the second statement was explaining the first statement, rather than Rav's saying that the second statement is Tfos Lashon Acharon, is that we go after the second statement and we ignore the first statement. But over here, right, Kamash Malon, our Mishnah, or the way Rav explains our Mishnah here, is that no, that the reason is Tfos Lashon Acharon. It doesn't have to do with Mefaresh, but rather then the second statement stands. Whatever, if you have two statements, the first statement becomes irrelevant and the second statement is what dictates. That's the way Rashi learns it. Tosfos, according to the Ri, learns it differently. He says that just like over there, in the case of the coins, right, it is, and we would have thought that it's Perushe Kamefaresh, that the second statement is modifying or explaining the first statement, so too in our Mishnah, we would have thought that it's Perushe Kamefaresh, right, that it's coming to explain the first statement, meaning that if we only had the case of Istir of the coins, maybe Rav over there would say Tfos Lashacharon, but over here in our Mishnah, he would explain that it's Perushe Kamefaresh. And the other way around, if we said in our Mishnah that it all goes to the Maskir, meaning that it's Tfos Lashon Acharon over here, then I would have thought the case by the coins was Perushe Kamefaresh. So since the two cases, if you only had one of the two cases, I would have thought the other case was simply a modification of the first statement. And therefore, we need both cases to teach you that in each case that Rav believes Tfos Lashon Acharon, that we go after the second Lashon. There's a third interpretation, third way to read the Gemara of Rabbeinu Shmuel. It's not an argument, it's actually in the another sugya where this is brought down, but in Baba Basra. But the problem of Rabbeinu Shmuel is actually he doesn't read so well into our Gemara, so we won't spend time on Rabbeinu Shmuel. Now, Shmuel says, no, that I don't agree with you, Rav, but Shmuel Amar, Bibaba Emsa Chodesh Askinan. We're talking about a case when the tenant and the landlord come to Beis Din to find out what the din is about this 13th month. When they come in the middle of the month, then we say Yachloku. Aval, had they come at the beginning of the month, kulei demaskir, everything would belong to the landlord, meaning that the 13th month would have to be paid by the tenant, otherwise he wouldn't be able to stay there. If they come after the 13th month is already over, kulei desocher, right? It all belongs to the socher, meaning it remains with the tenant. If he's lived there already for the 13th month and hasn't paid for it, then we don't demand of him to pay now. So now it's the Gemara says, basically, Shmuel's position is that he doesn't know if Tfos Lashon Rishon or Tfos Lashon Acharon. We don't know which is the first statement is what's meaningful and the second statement is irrelevant, or is it that the first statement is irrelevant and the second statement is meaningful? So since we don't know which one, we say, put the money or put the object Bechezkato, wherever the Chazakah is. So therefore, if the tenant already has lived in the land, then who's trying to remove now money? The landlord is trying to get money from the tenant. So we say, leave the money with the tenant because we're not sure, and then it's going to be Motzi Mechavero Lavaraya. On the other hand, if the tenant has yet to live there, then we say, who does the property belong to? The property belongs to the landlord. So since the property belongs to the landlord, he's the one who's muhzak in it. If he's muhzak in it and the tenant wants to stay there, then either he has to pay, right, or he has to prove that he's entitled to stay there without pay. On the other hand, if he comes in the middle of the month, then we have half of each. I mean, once he comes in half a month, the first half of the month that the tenant already lived there, he's not going to have to pay for because the money's in his hands, and therefore he's muhzak in the money. On the other hand, for the second half of the month, right, he hasn't lived there yet, and the landlord's it's the landlord's property. Since it's the landlord's property, and he wants to live there without paying, he's got to show, right, then the landlord is considered muhzak in it, and therefore that's why there will be yachloku. So that's according to Shmuel. The Gemara says, Mi'amar Shmuel, Does Shmuel really say Lo Aminin Tefos Lashon Achron? Does Shmuel really believe, meaning based on Shmuel's statement, it's a safek, whether the first statement is binding or the second statement is binding? We think, we know from Shmuel that it really is the second statement. Vaha, Rav Shmuel de Amrei Tavayu, Rav and Shmuel, both of them say, Kur Bishloshim. If a person sells a kur, right, which is 30 sa'ah worth of produce for 30 sela, then I'm willing to sell it to you. The individual, when it's sale, the sale is not considered consummated or complete until the entire 30 sa'ah, the entire kur, is given over here. Why is that? Because it's been made, or the statement indicates that it's a single transaction. It's one big single transaction, which says kur for shloshim, for 30. So until the entire kur is given over, there's no full kinyan here to say that it's irreversible. On the other hand, if he says kor b'shloshim, a kor for 30, and then he says, I'll explain that to you, that means sa'ah b'sela, that each sa'ah will be worth a sela, meaning 30 sa'ah that's found in a kor, each sa'ah will sell for a sela, animar lecha, rishon kana. Because there he divided the transaction into discrete parts. He doesn't say it's one big transaction, but he's saying that each sa'ah that you buy is worth a sela. So as he makes a kinyan on each sa'ah, he then becomes irreversible. He cannot back out of the transaction for that sa'ah. What remains he can back out of, but whatever he puts there has sold already, he can't back out of, because there's a kinyan in each individual part, and it's as if each transaction, each sa'ah, is a discrete transaction. Where it says, so it sounds from there that tefos l'shon achron. Why? Because the statement he made is kur b'shloshim, sounds like a kur for 30, but then he said sa'ah b'sela. So which, it's like our Mishnah, which one of these languages is going to apply? You gave both languages. So it sounds like the Rav and Shmuel both paskin that it goes by sa'ah b'sela, and that's what dictates over here. So it sounds like tefos l'shon achron. So how could Shmuel say in our Mishnah that it's a safek when we see in other places Shmuel says tefos l'shon achron, that the latter statement is the binding statement? Where it says, no, hatum taima mai. Now, what's the reasoning by the kur? Mishum de tofis. Hachanami katofis. No, the reasoning over there by the case of the kur is the same reasoning that applies by our Mishnah. And what is that? That we really have a safek. We're in doubt as to whether tfos lashon rishon or tfos lashon achron. We're in doubt as to whether the first statement is binding or the second statement is binding, and therefore we go after whoever is muhzak in the item remains there. So in our case here by the kur, right, if in the second case where he makes both statements, we're not sure what it is, therefore everything that has been given already, we say, stays with the buyer. Anything that he has yet to give, that he can back out of, because we're not, there's no kinyan there. So again, whoever's muhzak in it, we say it remains in that possession. And the same thing in our Mishnah. Whoever's muhzak, meaning whether it's the money or the property, depending where we are along in the rental, then whoever's muhzak, whether it's the socher in the money or the landlord in the property, then that will be, we'll split it along those lines because of that safek. So the same safek that exists, or that Shmuel is explaining in our Mishnah, also exists in that case of the kur b'sa'ah, the kur shloshim, sa'ah b'sela, because over there also there's a safek, and therefore whatever has already entered into the possession of the hands of the buyer, that we say is irreversible, because otherwise he's the one who's mukzak in it. On the other hand, that which is yet to be sold, since that those produce is in the hands of the mocher, the seller, we say there he can back out because it's in his possession. Now we have a third answer to our Mishnah, or to explain our Mishnah about what the din is over here. Rav Nachman Amar Karka Bechezkat Balea Kayemet. Nachman says that land always is in the possession of the owner. So what is a Micah Mashmalan? What is Rav Nachman coming to teach us? That Tfos Lashon Achron. In our Mishnah it says, right, that I gave you a lease for a year, and each month is at this and this rate. So Rav said Tfos Lashon Achron, we go after the second language, and therefore it's all the benefit accrues to the landlord, because this is really a month-to-month lease. So now Rav Nachman comes along and says, well, the property is always in the possession of the Balim. If the property is always in the possession of the Balim, then the benefit, again, will accrue to the landlord. He's saying the exact same thing that Rav is saying, which is Tfos Lashon Achron. Now, the Gemara says, as Haino de Rav. That's the same thing as Rav. No, Af Agav de Apip Meipach. No. Rav Nachman, it's irrelevant, according to Rav Nachman, which way you make the statement. It doesn't matter if you say a year first and then month-to-month, or you say month-to-month and then a year. According to Rav Nachman, the maskir, the landlord, always has the upper hand. As opposed to Rav, who says it has to do with Tfos Lashon Achron, always has to do with the latter statement, which is binding, whether it's to the benefit of the maskir or the socher, whoever its benefit it is, the second statement will be binding. Rav Nachman says, no, it's always the landlord's benefit because he is in possession of the property. Now, because why according to Shmuel, the whole inyan is when we show up into Beis Din. The safek, the doubt that we're trying to adjudicate, at that point in time, we make a decision once you reach Beis Din. Rav Nachman says, why do you have to go to Beis Din for there to be the safek? The safek exists whether or not we walk to Beis Din. And since the safek already exists from before the time we entered Beis Din, meaning from the moment we reach the 13th month, the decision about the safek should be made, even though we postponed going to the Beis Din later, nevertheless, that safek existed. We're going to go after the chazakah. And who is the muchzak here? The muchzak is the landlord, is the balabait. And if he's the muchzak, then it should always accrue to his benefit. It's always that the socher is trying to take something away from the landlord, because from the moment he's trying to enter in that 13th month, the landlord is ready muchzak in it. And that's the point when the safek was nolad that it started. Okay, the Gemara continues. Bami name Rabbi Yanai. That's the question of Rabbi Yanai. Socher Amar Netati. The renter says, I already paid my rent. Umaskir Amar Lo Natalti. And the maskir says, I didn't get paid my rent. The landlord says, I didn't get paid yet. Amila Viraya. Who has the burden of proof on? So Mar says, Eimat, when is this? Ibitoch Zmano, if it's still within the rental period, Tanino, we have a Mishnah. Il Achar Zmano, if it's after the rental period, Tanino, we also have a Mishnah. So Rashi's Girsa over here is the Tanan. We have a Mishnah, Meta Av, that we're talking about Pidyon Bechor over here. Whereas many of the other Rishonim believe that this is talking about a case of Stam Schirut. Stam Schirut is Shloshim Yom. Basic Schirut is for 30 days. And the question of inside the 30 days, outside the 30 days, has to deal with Stam Schirut. And that if the father dies within the first 30 days, we assume that he has not redeemed his son, unless we have proof to the fact that he did redeem his son, because we will assume that the father, during the time period where he still owes the money, we assume that he has not yet paid the money, since the obligation hasn't devolved upon him yet, therefore we assume he hasn't paid it yet. On the other hand, if he passes away after the 30th day after his son was born, then we assume that the child was or had a pidyon ben, ad sheyomru lo shelo nifta, until we get evidence to the contrary. Now again, over here, that we don't say ad sheyaviraya, because there's nobody to bring a proof over here. I mean, no kohen could come to this individual and say, you owe me, because you could always say it was paid to a different kohen. No kohen could represent the whole class of kohanim to make a claim over here. So the way the Gemara phrases it, until the neighbors say that we know for certain that it wasn't the case. Until we have knowledge to the contrary, we assume that the individual had a pidyon ben. So we know then, if it's in the Zman, we assume he hasn't paid, and the one who says he paid has to come and bring a proof. And then if it's after the Zman, after the termination of the rental time, then we assume it is paid, and the one who is trying to demand payment has to bring a proof. No, the case is it's on the day that the lease is terminating. It's on that last day. So he says, the socher, the renter says, I paid it in the morning, and the maskir says, I never received anything. So when it says, the Gemara wants to know, on the last day of the rental, does a person come and make his payment on that day, alone or not? So Amar Lehu, Rabbi Yochanan, Tinitua. We learned this already. Why? Because we know, schir bizmano, when it comes to a laborer, on the day that he's supposed to receive his payment, nishba v'notel. This is one of the shavuot d'rabbanan that was instituted by the rabbis in the Gemara in Shavuot, and that a person is allowed to take a shavuot and then take, because all shavuot midoraita are to make you patur. The number of shavuot, and we'll see that when we reach the Gemara in Shavuot, that the Rabbanan instituted in order to protect individuals where they could take a shavuot and then take it. One of them is a schir. One of them is a worker. So over here it seems that a worker on the time, bizmano, when it comes to his time to collect his wages, then he's nishba minotel. He can take a shavuot. So our underlying assumption from that is that the balabait does not pay his worker, even though it's the time to pay his worker. We don't pay his worker, and then the schir can come along and take a shavuot and take his money. The Gemara says, "Schir hu, deRama banan shvuale." Now, the case of schir of a laborer is a unique case because the Rabbanan gave him a shvuah. Mishum de balabai terud bepolav, because we assume that the hirer or the owner who is hiring this work or this laborer, he is busy with his business and with his other workers, and therefore he forgets whether he's paid or not. So therefore we gave this chir, the laborer who really depends on it and really knows whether he got paid or not, we give him the ability to take a shvuah and then extract the money. It's not because we assume that the landlord hasn't paid, but rather it's because this chir is a unique circumstance in which we know, or we can trust the chir, we can trust the laborer to know better than the landlord, because the landlord is involved in many other issues, and therefore he may not remember if he paid one individual or the other individual, but the schir, the laborer himself, will know, so therefore we say, take a shavuah. But in our case over here, In our case over here, it might be that we can assume that the individual would pay on the day that it's due, because over here there's no reason to believe that either the tenant or the landlord has any better idea, and therefore maybe even here the tenant would pay on the last day. Okay, we'll stop over here.